let's stay with the pictures, shall we? The pictures. Pictures. Moving pictures. When you settle into your seat this weekend, if you go to the movies, maybe to see Argo or Seven Psychopaths, even if you toss in a DVD of some frothy comedy entertainment like Hangover 2 or something like that, or grab a classic from iTunes and watch Bogart always have Paris in Casablanca, I can see it now. You are stepping into an amazing epic yourself. The epic story of the movies is a story of civilization itself. Longtime movie authority David Thompson's new book is The Big Screen, The Story of the Movies, which is a smushy homage. It's also a Gone with the Wind historical gem all about the movies themselves. It's completely irresistible, and David joins us in the studio. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you very much.
So to try to tell the whole story of the movies is really a story of technology, a story of media, a story of psychology, a story of celebrity. It's a story of everything. Huge task.
Well, it's more than the movies, too, because it's really a story about screens. It's movies, it's television, it's the multiplicity of screens we have now. It's the screen you're looking at, it's the three screens to your left, it's the screen in front of you. Everybody spends so much time looking at screens, and they think they're looking at reality and dealing with it. But maybe they're not. Maybe they're just dealing with a plastic surface.
How did early films really distort the reality of the first people who went into those dark rooms to sit in front of those screens?
Because it subjected them to an incredible, sudden, inexplicable experience that could cut quicker than they could blink. They had no way of keeping up with it. In France, when the Lumiere brothers first showed film, a train came slowly towards the camera. The audience got up and ran out because they believed the train was going to come out of the screen and hit them. Naive,
those were some awesome special effects.
Yeah. Primitive. But, you know, you go to see a horror film and you still jump when the knife comes out of the screen. We're still reacting in that kind of way. And we don't teach ourselves enough about how to deal with it.
You know, the movies, the story of the movies is also the story of how people behave or dream that they could behave. Here's Bogey and Bacall lighting up in The Big Sleep.
You've forgotten one thing. Me.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing you can't fix.
That sort of noir writing, meeting the screen, meeting the movie camera, produces a whole new reality.
And smoking cigarettes and yeah. Living in the smoke. There is a shot in that film of an ashtray with two cigarettes side by side smoldering, intensely sexual, but horribly predictive of what would happen. Bogart dies at about 58 of esophageal cancer.
The movies are about sex and culture and style. When does that take off? And it certainly never stopped.
I think it happened very, very early. I think the movies were always capable of showing us something that we felt had been forbidden. And we love the forbidden. And we dream ourselves into it. And sex and violence were two of the most obvious ways. But simply behaving well, being cool. Bogart is now known not really for sex, not for violence. It's for being cool.
Cool, exactly.
And kids today and for decades have thought being cool is the indefinable essential to life. It comes from the movies.
You know, I love that you wrote about this movie. It's one of my favorite. It's Bertolucci, I believe, right? Marlon Brando in Last Tango in Paris?
That's right.
All right, listen to this. This was a scandalous, very, very controversial movie of its day. Here's a clip.
You don't ever have to be afraid, or you don't have to feel lonely, you never have to feel empty. That's what you want, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, you'll never find him.
But I find this man.
Well, then it won't be long until he'll want you to build a fortress for him out of your hair and your smile and the way you smell.
This performance is amazing. This movie is Death of a Salesman rolled in with the Odyssey, it seems to me.
Yeah, and it's a film in which the woman takes off all her clothes for large patches of the film, and the man declines to do that. The man got paid $250,000. The woman got paid, can you guess, $4,000.
Amazing.
I mean, you know, it was a breakthrough in sexuality on the screen, no question. And as you say, very controversial. But it was an extraordinarily sexist work in the way it was put together.
Listen to this film, Bonnie and Clyde.
How are you?
This here's Miss Bonnie Parker.
Glad to meet you.
I'm Clyde Barrett.
Clyde.
We robbed banks.
In the movies, America learns to love its dark side.
Yeah. From the 30s, with gangsters, with Frankenstein, with King Kong, monsters become sentimental characters. We like them. And it builds until we get to a stage where Bonnie and Clyde, we rob banks, we also kill people, we shoot them in the face, are two of the most glamorous and attractive people from the 60s. Hannibal Lecter, pretty dark character, from one film to another, becomes the heroine's love interest. We have an extraordinary capacity for bringing murderers and monsters within our emotional reach through film.
Francis Ford Coppola extended on that in the Godfather franchise, which not only transformed the movies, not only made gangsters cooler than they could ever be, but also transformed television with its spin-offs.
Oh, absolutely. I think The Godfather, the two first parts of The Godfather, are some of the most important, significant, influential films ever made in America. Cable television has a sort of density of texture, visual texture, and writing that comes from The Godfather. It was an extraordinary achievement. It won Best Picture, and for a few years, it was the most successful film at the box office.
David Thompson is the author of The Big Screen. You love anything that's coming out now?
I am not too keen on a lot of modern films. There is a film coming next year called Stories We Tell by Sarah Polley. I recommend that. Hold on for that.
David Thompson, author of The Big Screen. We always want to hear from you. Here's Linda from Miami.
Well, I think it's true. Most people don't vote for the vice president. They vote for the presidential candidate. I can assure you, John McCain lost a lot of votes because of Sarah Palin.
If you want to talk about the vice presidential debate, you know how to reach us, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.